This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of audio video coverage for the five-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into another edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast brought to you by CLNS Media and the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I'm Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen, and today we have a very special guest, Brickwall Blitz on Twitter, at Brickwall Blitz, that is, and it's Johnny Kinsley, who works for Music City Miracles. He also does the Deep Ball Project, which is one of my favorite off-season reads, where he goes in and studies actual ball replacement on quarterbacks and their deep throws and all that stuff. But Johnny, we've been trying to get you on the podcast for a while now, so we're happy to do it this week.
Happy to be with you guys. I'm looking forward to this.
Great. So obviously we have Johnny on because he, follows the Titans and covers the Titans very closely. And that's the matchup for the Patriots this week. And up here in New England, and I'm sure that some of it and down in Tennessee as well, is all about Malcolm Butler and his rematch with Bill Belichick, so to speak, here this week. And obviously Butler has struggled mightily. Maybe he kind of taps into that revenge game a little bit this week and puts together a good performance. But Johnny, what have you seen from Malcolm Butler this season, and why do you think he's regressed so much?
Yeah, I think he's struggled mightily this season, and I obviously a big reason for his struggles this season have been, well, he's not in the Belichick system anymore, and the Belichick system has always been a system that has put defenders where they're at their most comfortable. We've seen that with Butler in the Super Bowl against the Seahawks. We saw that where he was when he was a Pro Bowler in 2015. I think it was 2015. Yeah, it was 2015 when he was a Pro Bowler. And he's going to a defense which isn't necessarily poorly coached, but it's not coached to the standard of a team like the Patriots with Belichick. And big part of this is that his athleticism has been exploited. Like he's not as good with coverage or as backtracking and backpedaling, making up for lost yards as per se. A lot of the elite corners, we saw that with against the Cowboys, against Allen Hurns, where he got burned on a double move against Amari Cooper on that touchdown. So he was exploited against the Cowboys, and I actually think that Bill Belichick could exploit him and get matchups onto him, kind of like Sean McVay with Anthony Barr when the Rams played the Vikings. So I personally think that Bill Belichick could exploit this matchup, and we could see one of the receivers having a big day against Malcolm Butler on Sunday.
Yeah, it seems like that's one of the what was always one of the knocks against Butler. He wasn't like an elite athlete, so but he was a good cover corner. He had good skills and he was tenacious and all that stuff. Do you see any sort of drop off in his attitude? Because it seemed like that was one of his greatest assets, is that he was for whatever he lacked in the, pure physical skill, he had that real, dogged determination to win every ball.
Yeah. And in terms of attitude, I'm not exactly sure what started with it. I think it may have started like he was obviously demoralized when he got benched in last year's Super Bowl. And I'm not exactly sure if that's carried on with Tennessee, but like I said earlier, with him going to a different scheme, he's no longer with Belichick. That, like, along with his confidence level, I think that has a lot to do with him not exactly winning in coverage and regressing a little bit.
Yeah, I think his confidence level is definitely a big part of it. I wrote about it today about kind of just his struggles and where his technique is going awry. And Mike Vrabel keeps on telling everybody that asks him about it that eye discipline is a big issue right now with Malcolm Butler. He's peeking into the backfield at the quarterback, trying to jump routes and make plays on the ball instead of following his receiver and man coverage. But Johnny, I think that was a great point that you made about the scheme and kind of the differences between a Belichick scheme and what Vrabel is running. And a big thing that I'm seeing with it is that Butler is getting put on an island without safety help a lot of the time, and these guys are just running by him. And without that safety help over the top, it's kind of just one-on-one on the outside, and it's on him to you know, really protect against the deep ball. And that's kind of what we saw with that touchdown with Allen Hurns. The safety was on the other side of the field. The touchdown that he gave up to Will Fuller back in, all the way back in week two, the safety was on the other side of the field again, you know, worried about DeAndre Hopkins, and they kind of trusted Butler one-on-one against Will Fuller, and he just got burned at the line of scrimmage. And I think that with the Patriots, we saw Malcolm Butler, especially last year with Stephon Gilmore around, kind of take a back seat as that number one corner, and the Patriots started rolling the safety over Butler's side of the field a lot of the time, and kind of trusted Gilmore as to be the guy that was on an island with somebody and be alone without safety help. So I think a lot of the touchdowns, when you go back and watch them, a lot of them are man coverage situations where Butler is on an island without safety help over the top, and guys are just beating him, you know, on those deep patterns. So I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that, hey, you know, they paid him, what was it, you know, 4 or 5 years, $61 million, you know, total contract.
Yeah, I think it was 4 years the Titans paid him.
Yeah, they paid him that big contract to be a number one corner, and they've used him like a number one corner, and they've given more help to Adoree Jackson and Logan Ryan on the other side of the field, and they've really said, all right, Malcolm, like, you're our number one corner. You're the guy that we gave this money to trust to come in here and shut guys down, and it just hasn't gone that way for them. And whenever you're a quarterback, an opposing quarterback, and you see a guy with one-on-one coverage like that, that's just – instinctively where you're going to look to throw the ball. You're obviously not going to throw the ball on the other side as often when there's a safety over the top or a safety doubling or bracketing, whatever the case may be. So I think that that's a big part of Malcolm's issues, is the schematic side of things. And also just, you know, kind of talking about his confidence level, he's not anticipating routes as much as he used to in New England, where he's all over guys in man coverage because he's kind of, you know, keyed in on things. I think a lot of that has to do with film study and preparation that maybe he's just not getting from the coaching down there that he would have gotten with the Patriots, with Bill Belichick obviously running things here. It just seems to me like a lot of the Patriots corners, a lot of the time, based on the formation, based on the releases of receivers in their, into their stems, they're very much, you know, their anticipation is always excellent. And they're very good at kind of noticing what kind of routes and what kind of, you know, route combinations teams like to run out of certain formations and in certain situations. And that type of coaching can really help defensive players, because without anticipation, you're reacting to everything instead of anticipating it. And I've seen Butler really be on his heels a lot of the time, reacting to a lot of things that are happening instead of anticipating.
I mean, I'm not sure what I can say to like add on to that. I think you covered everything.
let's move on. A guy that I really wanted to ask you about, Johnny, is Marcus Mariota, because I know that you focus a lot on quarterbacks, and you've been kind of a Mariota truther. Can I say that? You've definitely been a guy that has kind of, you know, defended Marcus Mariota a lot. And then on Monday night against Dallas, he obviously had some really good moments. That throw that he made over the middle into triple coverage was insane. But there's also some other moments, like obviously he missed a wide open receiver in the end zone that
Corey Davis. And
that you kind of like say, okay, you know, maybe it isn't all there for Mariota. What have you seen from him in the past that has made you kind of into that truther for Marcus? And what, how have you seen him from him this year?
Well, in defense of me being a Mariota truther, I personally think that a lot of this, the conception of him stems from him obviously being from the spread offense of Oregon. So a lot of people associate him with being a running quarterback, when personally, I think he's more along the lines of, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and Phillip Rivers, not necessarily in these big time stats or winning, like, or being like a borderline Hall of Famers in Phillip Rivers' case. But in terms of style, mentality, I think he's closer to Rivers, Brady, and Brees than he is to a guy like Manziel or Mahomes, because he's a very quick passer. He's able to process reads very quickly in the pocket, and I think that's something that's made me catch on to the level of play. Like, it's always been something that has appealed to me. And his running ability is like it's definitely a threat, but in LaFleur's offense, it's used as more of a compliment, not necessarily a main ability. In Mike Mularkey's offense, two seasons before, it was used as more of a kind of focal point in that offense. But here it's been lessened, and there's been more of a focus on Mariota's ability as a pocket passer. And I think that's something that Matt LaFleur, say what you want about how efficient his offense has been, but I think he understands who Mariota is a little more than a guy like Mike Mularkey does. On Monday night, we saw that Mariota had like one of the better games of his career in a while, and the ESPN booth was talking about, hey, this is a development game for Mariota. And I was looking like, this isn't necessarily a development game for Mariota. This is more along the lines of who he is, not who he can become. Because this is who he is to me when he has receivers that can catch, a scheme that clearly gives him he has a more defined scheme, so to say. So, we saw that Corey Davis, who has been having a lot of trouble being on the same page with Mariota. He was on the same page this time around. Deion Lewis was also a guy that helped him a lot out of the backfield underneath, and he had a gigantic performance against the Cowboys. Taywan Taylor was actually making a couple of contested catches. We know he's had a lot of trouble making contested catches over the season, and he's been a complete liability unless he's on like screenplays, which have decreased over time on the Titans' previous three-game losing streak. So this is who Mariota is to me with a competent scheme and receivers that can catch the ball. Like I understand, like this may sound kind of like a cop-out, but really, if you don't have like a competent environment, and when I say competent, I don't mean like outstanding environment, like the Chiefs or the Rams. I say like something that gives you like enough breathing room that you're able to thrive and you're able to carry the offense. And we definitely did see that with Mariota, and especially Evan, you mentioned that that throw in the triple coverage to Darius Jennings, and that reminded me a little of Mariota's throw to Delaney Walker against the Colts last year in quadruple coverage, except that was quadruple coverage, this is triple coverage. But Mariota has always displayed that an impressive level of accuracy that has never really been completely defined by his completion percentage. It's always been defined by these analytics, including stuff that I made with the Deep Ball Project, which has shown that he's had an impressive level of downfield accuracy over the years. And I think this year he's playing better than what his stats, five touchdowns, five interceptions, would indicate because of the scheme. On that three-game losing streak, I thought he was actually playing well. He was playing fine. He wasn't playing great on that streak, but he was playing fine. The bigger problem was receivers like Nick Williams, Taywan Taylor, were dropping all these touchdowns, and that was completely stalling drives. And Mariota has definitely taken some really rough sacks. We saw a couple of those against the Ravens where he was sacked like 11 times, but in general, I think Mariota has played well, a lot better than a lot of people would indicate. So I think that the Monday night game was not an aberration. It was not a fluke. I think this is who Mariota is when he has breathing room in the offense.
Yeah, I think from what I've seen from Mariota, it's been inconsistent. But like you made reference to, it seems like there's been a lot of different ways that guys have tried to use him in terms of the coaching staff. And I think that can sometimes stunt a quarterback's development if he's not working in the same system. And I also don't think he's always had the best, you know, weapons. But I do think, you know, like we're going to get to soon, you know, Corey Davis is starting to emerge a little bit. So I think it's a combination of those things. I believe he's a very talented quarterback physically. I do think he's a pretty accurate guy, and like you said, it's not always reflected in the completion percentage numbers, but you know, watching him up through, you know, his college career and everything like that, I mean, that the guy knows where to put the ball. So I think, you know, as he gets more comfortable in this system, as he gets more weapons that can get open and and make plays after the catch, the you know, the better you'll see out of him. I just don't think we've seen his best yet. And, you know, I think we're capable, you know, he's capable of putting together more nights like the other night.
Yeah, I think that with Mariota, the biggest thing is that a lot of his mistakes, like we saw when he missed that throw to Corey Davis, come in clean pockets. And that kind of gets people nervous, is that, you know, when a quarterback is in a clean pocket, especially an NFL quarterback, a guy that's supposed to be a franchise guy, he should be hitting the open throws from clean pockets. But on the other side, his throws from dirty pockets under pressure and also in the red zone, kind of, you know, Johnny, what you were talking about with his processing speed, that's where that kind of shines. And his stats under pressure every single year are among the league's best, because he's so good at going through his reads quickly and finding open receivers. And he's also one of the best guys in the red zone. At one point, I think he had like a ridiculous streak at the beginning of his career where he hadn't thrown an interception in the red zone, and he was,
yeah,
the touchdown to interception ratio was just nuts for him in the red zone, because a lot of his processing skills and accuracy can kind of shine in those situations. So I think that there is a lot to like about him. And I think what LaFleur is doing, and Belichick talked about this yesterday, is essentially the LaFleur offense in Tennessee resembles a lot of what they ran in Atlanta when LaFleur was there with him and Kyle Shanahan. And a lot of the things that they like to do in that LaFleur-Shanahan offense, you know, bootlegs and a little bit of zone read. Not that they did that a ton with Matt Ryan, but they did do some RPO in Atlanta with Matt Ryan. So now we have some zone reads. We have some deep, kind of concepts to get guys open vertically downfield that are good for Mariota's skill set. So I've definitely seen, I think that right now what we're seeing, and Adam and I were kind of talking about this before you jumped on here, Johnny, was just that there's an adjustment period to a new coaching staff that's they're all going through, the whole team is going through right now. I mean, this whole coaching staff is completely revamped from head coach to defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator on down. So there is going to be some sort of a learning curve. So although the Titans aren't scoring a ton of points, I think that what we see is that finally Mariota is in an environment with the offensive coordinator that knows how to use his skill set to its, you know, best of its abilities, unlike what Malarkey was doing over the last couple of years, which I don't think anybody that watched Titans football over the last couple of years, especially on the offensive side of the ball, really knew what Mike Malarkey's scheme was or what they were going for on the, you know, in terms of route design and route concepts. Like, there really wasn't any plan. And there, especially, I didn't feel like there was any real way of using Mariota's legs more than just on scrambles or design QB runs. This offense, with those bootlegs being such a major part of it, is definitely opening things up for Mariota in that respect as well. Although I will say the feeling around the Patriots locker room from just talking to some of the defensive players, especially on the defensive line, is that they're not so worried. And I wanted to ask you, Johnny, they're not so worried about Mariota throwing on the move. They said, you know, over the last couple of weeks, especially with Pat Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers, those types of guys throwing on the move are, you know, electric, obviously. And they said that Mariota's legs is more about him scrambling and running for yards than it is about his accuracy throwing on the move. And he's much more accurate from inside the pocket. Is that something that you've seen as well?
Yes, and it's actually something that I've preached over the years. I think Mariota is better as a quarterback in the pocket than he is outside. And I've actually written a few articles for Music City Miracles on that particular part, because I previously mentioned that Booger McFarland, Jason Witten, and Joe Tessitore, they were talking about, or at least Booger was post game, that this was supposed to be like a development game for Mariota. And then they were like, oh, wow, this is extremely surprising because he's making all these throws in the pocket. And it's just like, well, if you watch the games a little closer, you can see that he's been doing that a lot. It's just with the offense that Malarkey had in 2017, which really suffocated Mariota, and which was a big reason why his stats from 2016 to 2017 regressed massively. I think you would see that there were a significant number of plays where he was passing in a pocket and was passing pretty efficiently. So I think the Patriots are right to necessarily scoff off pass over Mariota's ability to scramble outside the pocket. I think he's more of a guy that can beat you in the pocket, similar to Tom Brady, with his quick processing and ability to progress with his reads quickly.
Yeah, that was basically what I got the gist of from them, is that, you know, they've played so many quarterbacks with Rodgers and Pat Mahomes being the, you know, kind of the two ringleaders there, that are just absolutely incredible at throwing on the move and can hit open receivers, you know, from different platforms and on the move when they're moving towards the sideline and stuff like that. And they just said, you know, Mariota's accuracy there isn't as good and he's not as dangerous in that respect, but his legs, they're definitely worried about his legs in terms of scrambles and also like the zone read type stuff that this Tennessee offense runs and him running in that vein. But let's talk about some of his weapons. And one of the guys that, you know, we in New England have obviously grown to love and grown to know a whole lot about is Deion Lewis. And this game against Dallas on Monday night, he kind of, you know, elevated to where we've seen Deion Lewis in the past, you know, catching balls out of the backfield and running between the tackles and doing kind of a little bit of everything. What have you seen from Deion as he kind of adjusts to his new team? And both me and Adam, you know, were just talking about this as well, just saying that we kind of feel like Deion is Deion, and he looks about as good as he did here in New England.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that can succeed outside the Belichick scheme, and I think he's at a 2015 form, meaning like before the ACL tear that he had in 2016. He looked kind of like a shell of his former self. He wasn't necessarily running as hard. He wasn't running necessarily as quick. He wasn't making guys break their legs. So that was why the Patriots had four backs coming into the season. We weren't exactly sure if Deion Lewis was going to be able to make the roster coming into the 2017 season, but they managed to keep Mike Gillisley, Rex Burkhead, James White, and Deion Lewis. And then eventually, by the Raiders game in Mexico, Deion Lewis was able to take over, and he was able to become the feature back for the rest of the season. And I think Matt LaFleur in Tennessee has realized at last that he's better than Derrick Henry. At least he's a better fit in this offense than Derrick Henry. In Mike Mularkey's scheme, Derrick Henry was a better fit than Deion Lewis because Mike Mularkey had the exotic smash mouth offense that he pounded to death because he had a run heavy scheme that certainly loved to use Derrick Henry early, but especially later on, he would have all these late game touchdowns against the Texans and Colts. I think he had game clinching touchdowns against both teams, and he certainly had that huge run against the Chiefs in the playoffs where Mariota had that huge block. But with Deion Lewis, he fits a more modern scheme because he's a guy that isn't just a good running back, but he's also a phenomenal receiving back. He has the lightning quick footwork. He has the speed in the open field, and we've definitely seen that in New England. And I think that's something that Matt LaFleur is finally realizing Tennessee. So Deion Lewis is one of the more exciting backs. He actually runs with a little more power than Derrick Henry, which is a little ironic because Derrick Henry was drafted to be this powerful guy running between the tackles in an inside zone scheme, so to say. But Deion Lewis has actually done that a little more because Derrick Henry has developed, or not necessarily developed, he's become this guy that is always trying to go to the sidelines, whether he needs to or not. And that's something that a lot of Titans fans have noticed and have complained about in regards to Henry. So I'm one of those guys that from the start has thought that Deion Lewis was a better fit and a better back for this offense than Derrick Henry. And the Titans coaching staff is finally realizing that.
Thank God. It only took them till week 9, week 10.
It took them after the bye to realize that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think, Adam, we both agree with Johnny here that, and with the Titans, hopefully, finally, that Deion Lewis is the best running back on that team.
Yeah, I like Deion a lot. It's one of those things, too, where he always surprises you with his power. I remember when he first sort of came on the scene with New England, when people were sort of like, well, he can't really run between the tackles, but he can. You know, it's just sort of when you look at him, you don't think because he's so small that he'll be able to run with power between the tackles, but he can. So, and he's such a unique runner in the way that he makes people miss in short space. You think you're going to be able to make the tackler a big hit on him, and you just don't. So, you know, he's a unique player. He's an effective player. He's somebody who can hurt you in a variety of ways. And I think that, you know, the more he gets the ball, the better he's going to be. So, yeah, I think he helps the offense. I was really impressed with what I saw from him last week. He finishes his runs really well too. He's, you know, I just think, you know, anytime you watch him, he's sort of an undeniable talent. So, you know, he's one of those guys too, you know, like we've been referencing about his ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. That's, you know, every week me and Evan seem to be talking about, you know, which running back can hurt the Patriots as a receiver out of the backfield. And that's one of those league-wide things where, you know, the defenses haven't really quite caught up to offenses that have, you know, great receiving running backs. And the Patriots are definitely, you know, one of those teams where it's just a struggle, you know. So that's just an area of the game where Tennessee could find an advantage. And Lewis is the perfect back for that. And, you know, I just feel like he's just sort of a more complete back than he sometimes gets credit for.
Yeah, I think that this is an interesting game, an interesting test of this coaching staff in Tennessee, the Vrabel, the Fleur, Peace kind of trio, because there are a lot of ways that they can kind of attack the Patriots matchup-wise, especially on the offensive side of the ball with Deion, that, you know, could really have a lot of success for them and potentially win them this game. I also think that, you know, we'll see with Malcolm Butler, you know, not to go back on this completely, but we'll see if they continue to put him on an island without safety help, then the Patriots are going to pick on him like everybody else has. But if they've kind of learned and evolved and know that Belichick is going to take advantage of that matchup if it's there, then I wouldn't be surprised to see the safety over the top on the other side and giving Butler more help. So I think that with Deion, it's the same thing. If the coaching staff there in Tennessee is smart enough and savvy enough to pick up on this, then they're going to send him out of the backfield to catch passes, you know, at least 5 to 10 times in this game at the minimum, I would think, in terms of targets. And I think that that's, you know, an area where they can really exploit this Patriots team if they notice it and if they take advantage of it. And LaFleur obviously was the quarterback's coach in Atlanta when they were in the Super Bowl against the Patriots a few years ago, and those running backs Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman had huge games catching the ball out of the backfield. So he knows all about that, and he knows, you know, that they can take advantage of the Patriots defense in those ways. So it'll be interesting to see. But I also think that there's another element that without Delanie Walker, I believe, is not playing in this game, if I'm not mistaken, Deion could see Patrick Chung a lot of the time in coverage instead of a linebacker. The Patriots have done that a little bit more against some of the better pass catching backs in the league. Guys like Nyheim Hines, for example, has seen that. Kareem Hunt's seen it at times too in that Kansas City game, where they've used Chung as safety or a box linebacker, whichever way you want to look at it, as a guy that, you know, is matching up against running backs that could really exploit them after you know, out of the backfield as pass catchers, especially after what Corey Grant did to their linebackers in that game down in Jacksonville. They've kind of adjusted and gone away from that a little bit. So we'll see what happens. But I think we all agree that Deion looks like the same type of guy, and there's a matchup that they can exploit if they want to go that way. But I wanted to talk about Corey Davis before we move over to the defensive side of the ball. Very impressed with what I have seen from Corey Davis, even though the numbers aren't necessarily off the charts. Big, fast, very smooth receiver. You kind of see on the film now why they drafted him fifth overall. It was maybe a little bit too high, but he's still a very talented guy that I think is starting to come into his own a little bit, Johnny.
Yeah, and I like his struggles necessarily haven't been because of talent. Talent has never been an issue for Corey Davis. It's I mentioned this a couple questions before. It's been being on the same page of Mariota. It's kind of reminded me a little bit of Dorial Green Beckham in Tennessee, although to a lesser extent, because he was, like, in his rookie season, his only season with Tennessee, Dorial Green Beckham was never on the same page of Mariota, and then that just made the Titans coaching staff want to move on from him, and they traded them to Philadelphia. And to a lesser extent, Corey Davis has done that, although he offers a lot more athleticism than Green Beckham has. And I think that when Davis is at his best, like he was against the Eagles and the Cowboys, he's not only a guy that communicated with Mariota, but he's also a guy that isn't just a typical vertical threat. He's kind of been categorized as. I think he's also a guy that is a little similar to Adam Thielen in how he approaches the ball after the catch, and that he's able to have this impressive quick burst going forward that allows him to get one step ahead of the secondary and allows him to get yards after the catch that no one else on the Titans receiving corps can necessarily get because they don't really have the talent. And Corey Davis is the guy that the Patriots are definitely going to try and double team, because you know the Patriots are going to double team because they always double team the best player on the opposing offense, and it generally works. They've done that for years. They've done that since Belichick's been the head coach. So I think that Corey Davis is either going to have like a huge game somehow exploiting the Patriots secondary, or he's going to be completely shut down. I don't think there's going to be any in between.
Yeah, I think he could get us put on Gilmore Island, which is becoming a thing here in Foxborough, that, you know, putting Stephon Gilmore on the number one. Or, like you said, the Patriots also tend to like to kind of bracket or double team with their number two corner and put the number one on somebody else and shut him down. So we'll see how it goes. But, Adam, what have you seen from Corey?
Yeah, I like, you know, I again thought Corey was going to have a little bit more of an immediate success in the league. It makes sense that it's taken some time for him to get on the same page as Mariota, which I think happens with a lot of good young receivers. It's a big transition to the NFL, you know, especially depending on which types of offenses they come from in college. And, you know, I think he's a big guy. I do think it will be Gilmore versus Davis. I don't know how much help he's going to get, Gilmore, that is, but I think that makes the most sense to match those two up, especially given Gilmore's size would be a better matchup with Davis. But yeah, I think Davis has come along really well. You know, he's given, you know, a real weapon to Mariota, where I feel like that's one part of the offense that has really been sort of lacking for the Titans, is like a true number one receiver. So, you know, if he can continue his development, that would be huge for them. But, you know, in this game specifically, I expect Gilmore to put on him, and Gilmore's been really successful. I don't know. And like I said, I'm not sure how much help he'll get because Gilmore's been playing really well. But I do think, you know, no matter what happens, Davis will get – we'll get his. Will he completely go off? I'm not sure, but I think, you know, he's too good of a guy to just be completely shut down.
Yeah. Things I've noticed with him are kind of along those same lines as what both of you guys said. And I think that the attention to detail in his route running was really impressive. It wasn't so much him just using his athletic ability, which he does obviously have a ton of. He's starting to get the little things right as well. And also after the catch, Johnny, it was a good point as well, because he's impressed me after the catch more than I thought he would. I didn't necessarily know, before I started watching him this past week that was a part of his game, but he definitely has a really good feel and vision in the open field to kind of see blockers and see open space and do all those kinds of stuff as well. So he was an impressive guy. I think that he's still in the development stage, obviously, as most, you know, second year players are. So I wouldn't say that he's quite, you know, unstoppable or anything like that quite yet. But I think that he's starting to emerge quickly here as a guy that Mariota can really rely on to get open and create separation, which obviously is something that the Titans receiving core especially has struggled with over the last couple of years. Why they drafted him, fifth overall, and why they picked a receiver early was because of that. So I think that he's starting to become the guy that they want him to be. And this LaFleur offense, where he is basically their Julio Jones, is starting to present some ways for him to get into some space and his route running and able to kind of, you know, work a little bit more on an open side of the field or an open, you know, area of the field, which is obviously going to help any receiver. But let's move over to the defensive side of the ball. We talked a lot about the offense, obviously. I guess I wanted to ask you, Johnny, this defense is number one in scoring defense right now. That is what Bill Belichick will tell you if you ask them if any questions about this Titans defense, is that they're the top defense in the league. But the question really is that fake or is that real? You know, based on their opponents that they've played, they haven't exactly played the best offenses in the league either.
Yeah, I think it's sort of a mix. I have a mixed bag. I think this is a solid defense, but this isn't necessarily a team that has faced some phenomenal offenses. They face the Texans, who started 0-3, and they put up 17 points against the defense. Jaguars, who are on a 4-game losing streak. The Bills, who might be the worst offense we'll ever see. and last week, the Cowboys, who have a prehistoric offensive scheme, and they're just not good. But this Titans defense is solid, in my opinion. And I actually heard from ESPN, they actually apparently have the best red zone defense in the league, which does make sense, because whenever I've watched them, I've noticed they've given up relatively few red zone touchdowns outside of the ones that Malcolm Butler completely gave up to Amari Cooper and Allen Hurns. In terms of style, they do have some of the personnel to blitz, and that's kind of an issue for teams going up against the Patriots, because Tom Brady is one of the best, if not the best, quarterbacks against the blitz, and he's been that way for a long time. It's something he's not new to. It's something that he's always succeeded with going up against Dick LeBeau whenever he was on the Steelers. And LeBeau's not on the Titans anymore, but they still blitz a lot. I think they're top five in blitzes from what I've heard. But it's a little more varied this time around, because they love using guys like Logan Ryan, who used to play for the Patriots, and Kevin Byard. Those guys are heavily involved in the blitzing. They use quite a bit of double A-gap blitzing with their inside linebackers, which they love to use that blitzing with. A couple nickel blitzes, which I mentioned with Ryan and Byard. But in terms of if they're real or not, I think to an extent, yes, they're real, because they have some quality guys up on that defense. They got Drell Casey, who is one of the better defensive tackles in the league, and that's really a position that's been spoiled because of how good Aaron Donald is, which has left a lot of fantastic defensive tackle play sort of under the sun, really. But Casey, he has that fluid athleticism at the line. He has that sort of that quick hip movement that is able to get him inside or outside leverage. And that's always been something that has appealed to me. Harold Landry has continuously proven to people why he should have been a first round pick, and he somehow fell to the Titans in the second round, which is a blessing for them, because it gives them a threat at outside linebacker and a guy with a phenomenal Von Miller-esque bend, which is gradually gets more and more pleasing to watch as the weeks go by. Kevin Byard is sort of a guy that has caught on. He was one of the best safeties in the league last year, and this year his stats aren't quite as good, but I still think he's on pace for a really good year. He's a guy that is a ball hawk, and we saw that on his interception when he was helping out in double coverage with Amari Cooper on Dak Prescott this week against the Cowboys. And Adoree Jackson is also a guy at corner that has improved over last season. Logan Ryan has been solid. The only really real liability in the secondary has been Malcolm Butler, and I think that's going to be something that Belichick is going to exploit. But they have a decent pass rush, and they have a decent secondary. There's not one particular area where they're extremely overwhelming, but I think they're a defense that is greater than the sum of their parts, and I think with a few more pieces, they could be a dominant defense over time.
Yeah, I think when I was watching the Cowboys game, I was struck by sort of you know, how fast and physical they played. It seemed like they weren't, you know, sort of a passive defense. They were dictating the terms, and, you know, knew the plays before they were getting there. So, you know, I really liked to see Harold Landry's development. It seems like he's starting to catch on. And Casey obviously is a dominant player. He's going to be really hard to block on the interior. And so, you know, I feel like the Titans do have a good defense. And now, is it as good as their numbers indicate? You know, maybe not. But that doesn't mean they can't cause problems with this Patriots offense. This is, Byard especially is another guy that is tough to avoid because of his football IQ. So, you know, and I've been sort of waiting to see what Adoree Jackson is going to be, you know, grow into in this league, because he's got such amazing physical skills. And he was, in my opinion, a little inconsistent at times in college. But he's, again, you know, one of these guys that's super athletic, you know, could be just as good of a receiver if he switched over on that side of the ball. So, you know, I feel like the talent is there on this defense to be a dominating unit, and they've played well so far. So, you know, this will probably be, if not their toughest, then one of their toughest assignments of the year. But yeah, I think this is a defensive line too, that can, you know, even though that the scheme blitzes a fair amount, that this is a defensive line that can generate pressure on its own too. So it'll be interesting to see how much they blitz, knowing that Brady usually picks those things apart.
Yeah, I think that for me, Byard is a guy. Obviously, Casey's an unbelievable player too, and I think you're 100% right, Johnny, that he doesn't really get the love that he deserves because of how many great players there are at that position. It's just such a loaded position in the league right now that Donald and Geno Atkins and a lot of those other guys kind of get the accolades, but Jarrell Casey has just been a solid player every single year, really an elite player, you know, year in and year out, that kind of gets swept under the rug a little bit. But Byard is a guy that's really impressed me over the last couple of years. Obviously, last year, no one really knew who he was, and then he led the league in interceptions. But they play a lot of single high coverages, you know, cover one, cover three type looks, and he's just a perfect fit for that type of scheme. And his center field ability and ability to, you know, kind of have a high football IQ and anticipate things and see things happening in front of him and jump routes and do all that kind of stuff has been really impressive. And I think that if you take Malcolm Butler kind of out of the equation a little bit, or maybe even just improve his play, then this whole defense, you know, all of a sudden there's not anywhere near as kind of a weakness in this defense that I see. You know, he's kind of really been the only weak point in that secondary, which is, you know, impressive to see as well. But the other, you know, kind of weakness I wanted to ask you about was that inside linebacker position. Last year in the AFC divisional round, Tom Brady just absolutely carved this team up over the middle of the field, basically throwing, you know, little dump off routes to James White or Deion Lewis. And, Danny Amendola was heavily involved, and Gronk, obviously, who probably won't play this week, but he was also heavily involved. And they've drafted Rashawn Evans in the first round. He, as far as I know, hasn't played a ton quite yet in his rookie year. And the guys like Wesley Woodyard, who was on that team last year, you know, kind of got picked on at times by Brady in the passing game. Is that a way that you still see them struggle on a weekly basis? Or do you think that the scheme and some of the additions that they have in the, you know, surrounding those linebackers has helped out?
I think I would have to agree on your part. Because Rashawn Evans was drafted to improve that inside linebacker situation, and because of injuries and his struggles to stay on top of the depth chart, he really hasn't caught on, and it's kind of surprising that they haven't really used him as like more of a pass rusher, because he was used quite a bit as a pass rusher at Bama, and it was like that was like part of the reason why I thought that the Titans drafted him and Harold Landry, because they were able. Like I figured they were able to they were going to form this this pass rushing monster with Jarrell Casey, Harold Landry, and Rashawn Evans, but that hasn't really caught on because his injuries have slowed his progress. And I'm not exactly sure. I don't think I've seen him used on the blitz or as a pass rusher at all, and that's kind of a concern, because I'm not sure if it's health or they just don't think he's ready yet. But I think somewhere down the road they're gonna have to try and use him as an inside linebacker, because the depth in front of him really isn't that good. Wesley Willard, as you mentioned, Evan, has been picked on a little bit. Jan Brown has been solid, but I think Rashawn Evans has a higher ceiling than a Javon Brown kind of guy. So I think like sooner or later they're gonna have to like try and use him as an inside linebacker or as a pass rusher.
Yeah, I think the temptation, and I do agree that they can pick on Butler a little bit, but I think the temptation is to pick on Butler because of, you know, the past history and the Super Bowl benching, and, you know, there's kind of a you know, rivalry almost there that's formed between him and Bill Belichick. But I think the smart thing to do would almost be to attack the middle of the field again. And just going back through some of the tape, you know, from the Philadelphia game and even last week a little bit with Cole Beasley, the Cowboys were able to kind of pick apart the middle part of that zone. They play a lot of close, you know, middle of the field, but there's a lot of space a lot of the time between those linebackers, those inside linebackers and the safety over the top that can be exploited. Now, obviously, it would be a lot better if the Patriots had Gronk in this game to kind of take advantage of some of those areas. But I think Julian Edelman, maybe even Josh Gordon over the middle, and obviously the running backs, James White, coming out of the backfield. Last year, I was watching that tape of the divisional round, and they would just back off, you know, 5 or 6 yards every single time with those inside linebackers in zone coverage. Obviously, a different coaching staff, different scheme, so maybe they'll you know, wise up on that. But there was a ton of just space right in front of those zones for Deion Lewis, especially to just sit down and catch passes. And
yeah,
Brady will just take that all day, like especially on first and second down. If you're going to give him that 5 to 8 yards on first down and with the check down to the running back, he's more than happy to do that. And he's one of those quarterbacks that isn't, you know, kind of worried about getting a touchdown on every single play. He'll take those little check downs. He'll take those little 5 or 6 yards. They look at it almost like as a running play on first down. Now you get yourself into 2nd and 5, 2nd and 4, and it's much more manageable from that point out to get a first down. So I just think that that's kind of an area. Obviously, Butler is kind of the storyline and the headline, but I think there's an area in that middle of the field to still take advantage of this defense. And scoring in the red zone, though, is going to be key for both of these teams. And especially for the Patriots, who have struggled in some goal to go situations this year. This Titans defense is really a red zone, you know, threat as well. You know, they're number one in the league in red zone, like you said, and it's going to be an interesting matchup. I think that this Titans defense is pretty good. They're like 20th in DVOA and they're number one in points allowed. So there's like kind of a little bit of that 2016 Patriots feel to it, where the Patriots were the number one scoring defense in football, but a lot of people were kind of, you know, neglecting saying that they were a top defense because of how many yards they were giving up. So there's a little bit of that with the Titans defense as well. And I think a lot of people see Malcolm Butler getting toasted on a week-to-week basis and say, how could this be an elite defense when your top corner can't cover anybody? So it'll be interesting to see. But I think this pass rush too, that you mentioned, it's a 3-4 scheme, obviously, and Landry has kind of, you know, played a lot of outside linebacker. Arakpo is a nice player too. Johnny, I think that the main question here now is you know, the Titans are obviously what, 4-4, Patriots are 7-2. Do you see a formula, just to wrap this up, where the Titans can win this game? Obviously being at home is a big help for them.
I think would have to stem from they would have to play at the level that they played against the Eagles, but that's more of a Eagles offensive line struggling, which they have all season long. The home field advantage is obviously going to help, but I think with the matchup problems that the Patriots offense, specifically Tom Brady and all the underneath guys, give to give to guys like Malcolm Butler and the depth at inside linebacker, I think there's going to be a lot of underneath guys open, and I'm not exactly sure how the Titans win this game, because the Patriots have Julian Edelman, who was not here at all last season. Like he's been the guy. He's been the safety blanket for or safety net, whatever, for Tom Brady. He's always been the underneath guy, the guy that was how much he knew about getting open and how he was able to create separation in the Patriots offense. And without him last year, the Patriots had to resolve to being a more vertical passing offense, and they had some struggles there, but they've offset that to a degree because they traded Josh Gordon. They somehow got him for a fifth round pick. They have Edelman back, and I was actually a little concerned about him going into the season because he's 32. He's coming off a torn ACL injury, and he's coming back from a 4-game suspended. But he actually has looked like he hasn't lost a step, and that's really helped because Brady has that safety net back. So when you combine him, Josh Gordon, and James White, even with the absence of Rob Gronkowski, I'm just not sure how the Titans can shut down this offense, which is probably is going to be a big reason why I think the Patriots edge out the Titans in this game.
Adam, what do you think of formula for the Titans to win?
I would think it would be, making Brady's life difficult with the pass rush and sort of, seeing if they can keep it a low scoring game, extend their drives to take time off the clock and keep Brady off the field. I felt like the Packers were able to do that effectively at times against the Patriots, where they would take these long drives, finish them with touchdowns, and sort of do the opposite with the Patriots is for the Titans would be, if the Patriots put together a long drive, make sure it ends in a field goal, not a touchdown with that red zone defense. I think that, that would be the way to do it, is sort of, you can't shut down the Patriots, but you can sort of, limit them a little bit. And again, like with every team, when you're facing the Patriots, is to not beat yourself, because the Patriots sort of just play that game where they just play steady and smooth. And when the other team makes a mistake, they pounce on it. I think that goes for sort of every game when you face the Patriots, is to sort of button up your own end of the deal and not make sure you shoot yourself in the foot. But yeah, I would say, the red zone area for both teams is important, but keeping the Patriots offense off the field and when they do get in the red zone, forcing the field goals, I think is the formula for now.
Yeah. This Titans defense, definitely, Vrabel, obviously ex-Patriot, Dean Pease, ex-Patriot defensive coordinator, has a very Patriots kind of feel to it. They give up some plays. Definitely can find evidence on the tape of them giving up some plays here and there, especially Malcolm Butler, obviously. But they really clamp down in the red zone, and a lot of their games have been pretty low scoring. All right, Johnny, thank you so much for coming on, man, and thanks for staying with us. We like to talk, ramble on here, but that was all really great stuff, and I really appreciate your time. Go tell everybody where they can follow you and where they can read you and what you got coming down if you want to tease anything.
Absolutely. I am at Music City Miracles. You can follow them at Titans MCM. Let me just go to my bio quick because that's the thing. I'm at Titans MCM, a writer there. I also do stuff for the Dolphins at the Finsider. I write a little bit for the Jets at USA Today at the Jets Wire. I recently got hired to write for the Carolina Panthers at the Riotport at RRIOT Report. I do some stuff for the 49ers at 49ers Hub, Vikings at Purple PTSD, and I'm doing some video analysis for at FF Dynasty Trades. So there is a lot that I'm doing. You can also follow me at Brickwall Blitz. Evan, Adam, I really appreciate the time.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for coming on, Johnny.
Pleasure's all mine.
And for Adam and I, we will be back next week to preview. Well, it's actually a Patriots bye week, Adam, so we haven't discussed what we're going to do quite yet. I was going to say to preview a team, but we're not. There is no team. We'll be back next week with something. We'll probably do a year in review kind of type thing. Look back at the season so far. Some of the things that I wanted to touch on were just what we've seen that has been different from Brian Flores now taking over the play calling versus what we saw last year with Matt Patricia. So we'll get into some of that. And then after the bye week, the Patriots will be traveling to New York City to take on the New York Jets the week after or the Sunday after Thanksgiving. So obviously another divisional game. It'll be a lot of that saying that over the next couple of weeks here, a lot of divisional games that the Patriots haven't played yet. So they'll really get into their divisional schedule as the season comes down the docket here. But Adam, I know you're going to be at BC on Saturday, I'm assuming, for College Game Day in BC Clemson.
Yeah, so on Friday night, I'll be heading over to Canton at Scituate in the Division 5 South sectional final, which would be a really high-scoring game and fun to watch. Two teams that'll be good again next year, too. And then, all day Saturday, I'll be down at Chestnut Hill, College Game Day at BC, which you never see, really. First time since 07, I believe, so... the type of excitement that kind of atmosphere brings to this state is so rare for college football that it's just going to be so much fun. And hopefully people, even casual fans, will come down to check it out, see the signs, see the festivities. It's just sort of a special atmosphere. So I'd encourage people to go see that, even if they don't have tickets.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very cool. I think what you said, the first time since 2007 that we've had College Game Day here, the Matt Ryan BC years. Yeah. So pretty cool to have College Game Day back here. For CLNS Media, go check on clnsmedia.com. Something on Stephon Gilmore that I wrote and his kind of emergence as one of the league's better corners. Wrote about another corner by a guy named Malcolm Butler that we maybe talked about for about 45 minutes here on this podcast that you can go check that out as well. And Patriots game plan obviously will come out on Friday. And then, we'll have all the coverage that we normally have over on clnsmedia.com and at Patriots CLNS on Sunday when the Patriots take on the Titans. So make sure you follow all of that on our YouTube page as well and all of those things. But until next week, signing off. Thanks once again to Johnny Kinsley for coming on with us to talk Patriots Titans. Signing off for Adam Curtin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.